we don't have our full quorum, so we have some traveling members, but I'm joined, Senator Ward is here with me on the Senate Test Committee, and then we're joined by Representative Jewell and Senator Olson, who have been invited to all the meetings, and they are from the district that we've been talking about, and they're certainly invited to help in this discussion to give insight as to what we can do to make this better. I know it's Carl Rose is here, and I don't have any sign up, but Carl, did you want to do anything from the perspective of the team leader on the project report that you presented to us? If you'd like, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. As you've indicated, I was the team leader on the fact-finding team that went into the Northwest Arctic Borough School District, and more specifically, the Kivalina. I did have a chance to see a copy of the tape. I just recently returned from a trip, and I did have a chance to see the tape, and I thought that the commissioner did a nice job of going through the report. If I could, I'd like to lend some context to the fact-finding team, what we did, what we reported, and why, and possibly some insight, if that would be all right. In context, I would say with a fact-finding team such as this, if it were schools or if it were any entity, I think you'd want to start by trying to get an answer to the question why. As we went into Kivalina, we asked some questions why, in terms of some of the concerns over safety that was reported in the paper. And as we got on site and looked at some of the information, we had some concerns over student learning. As we took a look at the facts, we were more concerned with student learning than we were with some of the evidence that we were seeing in terms of safety. If I could for a moment, we had Trooper Greenstreet from Kotzebue with us, and much of the concern over behavior was either investigated or addressed by the troopers, and the behavior did not rise to the level of illegal question. What did happen was we did evidence that there was some aggressive behavior, some bad manners, but none of it rose to the level where the troopers needed to press charges. What was most alarming to us was we started to look at some of the information on student learning, some of the data, and we were very concerned with what we saw. Going back to my early comments, we asked the question why. We asked the question why. We looked at the processes that were being delivered, and that led us to examine some of the strategies that were being employed, which led us to some of the goals, which led us to some of the mission or the mission, and eventually the overall vision of the school district. And what this report represents is that all the disconnects between those entities. Now, I'm talking about the school child in the classroom, parents and teachers, the community and school, central office, executive staff, and eventually the school board, up and down. We found that there were issues regarding relationships, trusting relationships. There was a lack of cooperation and ultimately a lack of communication. Those three areas.
Now, are you talking primarily just about students? Or repeat for me what you're.
We're talking about the systemic approach of delivering education. So the policy arm at the school board, right down to the delivery to the child, there were areas of disconnect that caused people to ask a lot of questions. They were not well informed. Communication was not taking place. There didn't appear to be a lot of cooperation. And as I mentioned, those trusting relationships. Well, when you deal with a system, these are critical issues. More importantly, as we did our investigation and we took a look at you know, what we were seeing, ultimately we found that the needs of children were not being addressed. They weren't the highest priority. All of the report, as you have received, much of that report, the majority of the report deals with adult behavior, and I think we conclude that it's the adult behavior that needs to change, and it's much more important than kids. Our evidence has been that, you know, we model what we teach, or we're teaching something else. And I think in the case of Kivalina, some of the adult behavior is pretty much being modeled by some of the kids. Now, the state should be alarmed with the way that this was advertised in the paper. I do want to tell you that there is tremendous room here for improvement. I think that there are a number of options that are available for the district to exhaust before state intervention. But as you can see in the conclusion of my report, or our report, we talk about a group of people led by a competent, how do we refer to that? I think we refer to it as a competent team leader, to come in and address the needs or the behaviors that led up to the closure of the school, one, and secondly, an educational improvement plan. I think that there's a tremendous amount of opportunity there, and I think they have the wherewithal within the district. You're already funding that school through the foundation formula. I've understood, and I was concerned about how this report would be received by many of the people here, simply applying a cost-benefit ratio to the amount of money that's spent and the outcome that's received. So I was well aware of that. I'd like to talk to you just briefly about another thing that concerns me. We're on the verge of designating our schools. I think Kivalina may be one of many examples. I think the way that we go about addressing the Kivalina incident in terms of improving that situation will be key to the model that we employ with schools that we identify as poor performing schools. So with that, I wanted to share with you that the School Board Association is very concerned about this. We deal a lot in the area of governance. We deal a lot in the area of leadership and in community engagement. And we will work with Northwest Arctic to try to address some of those issues. But let me be clear. This cannot be a top-down or a bottom-up. It has to be both. There needs to be a willingness throughout the district to work together and put the interests of kids first. With that, let me share with you some of the things that I just recently read in the American School Board Journal. It's a publication of the National School Board Association. They identify four things that we can learn from our mistakes. The first thing is that you can't do something big like this with a narrow majority of people. Essentially, what it's saying is you have to build a broader base of support to improve and make the changes that need to be made and all the reasons why. So you need to have this discussion in a larger context to focus on what you need in place to make the positive move. Secondly, these complex issues in education, you can't deal with them with the latest educational fad. You just can't transport things in here and hope that it's going to fix the issue. You need to take the time to plan and think your way through to design programs that accurately address some of the needs that you're trying to address through your plan. A clear and concise plan that's comprehensive is essential. I think we all know that, we all talk about it, but we don't necessarily practice it. But a clear and concise plan that's comprehensive. And then lastly, these areas of disconnect. We have to, if you're going to try to do something with the public in a democracy, you have to relieve those areas of disconnects. The four things I've just mentioned are clearly evident in the case of Kivalina, all four of them. And so there is a roadmap here as to how we expand the support that we need, how we fashion and design school improvement plans, how we put together a clear and concise and comprehensive plan for that school district, and lastly, to cause more of a desire to cooperate, build a level of trust throughout the system so we can communicate and have a positive effect. One of the things that is hard to talk about, but I think is really important, is you have to be honest with yourself in dealing with your failures. If you're not honest in dealing with your failures, then it's very difficult to be successful in terms of achieving. Now, if you honestly take a look at Kivalina, which we've tried to do, we raise a number of issues that should cause a lot of people to be concerned. As I shared this with both Kivalina and with the Northwest Arctic Board, I asked them to consider taking this report and not necessarily debating or arguing over its contents, but to take a look at how we move forward. What would be the next steps if we were going to improve the quality of education? I think for the most part that was received fairly well. I can't go in there and wave a wand and fix everything, Senator, but I do think we place the issue squarely before the communities. And being an outsider going into a town and raising the issue of their school and community being dysfunctional the word dysfunctional was a very difficult thing to use in this case. As I visited with them, I explained that when you go to a school that is functioning well, you find that communities are supportive of these schools, you find that there is behavioral standards that are acceptable, and you find that the delivery of education, the system for delivering education, is meeting the needs of kids. And when those things are not there, the school is dysfunctional. Likewise with the community. There were some things in the community, adult behaviors, the willingness to accept less than acceptable performance on behalf of the kids, or behavioral issues. These things are reflective of a community that may be dysfunctional. Very difficult to tell parents that, but we did it because that's what we saw. There was not necessarily a level of acceptance, but a willingness to just examine that within the context of the overall report. As I shared the report with them, it became clear that this issue was more than just a Kivalina issue, which is why I wanted to speak to you today. As a state, and I mentioned earlier, we have other areas of concern, and I think when you take a look at Kivalina, this may well be reflected, as I mentioned in the opening introduction, this may be a snapshot of rural education. And so as we put together this comprehensive plan that is clear and concise for how we deal with Kivalina, we are probably putting together a comprehensive plan and model for how we address other schools. I think I'll stop there, Senator, other than to say that I was close to the issue. I got in and I got to see some things, and I found that there were inconsistencies depending on who you talk to. I will tell you this, that when it came to the closure of Kivalina School, I can't second guess why these things happened. But it did happen. It caused the state to focus on Kivalina. It caused us to take a closer look, and there's a tremendous opportunity now for residents of Kivalina as well as the Northwest Arctic School, Northwest Arctic Borough School District, and the rest of us who are involved in education to take a helping hand and try to improve this situation. And that is what I take away from this meeting. I think there's an opportunity here, and I think that the state should be concerned with the results that have been reported and with the report that we've submitted. The School Board Association will do everything in its power to work with other entities to help the Northwest Arctic, to help rural education, and ultimately to help all kids. If we're here for all kids and we want to leave no kids behind, that's what we want to try to do. So with that, I'll try to answer any questions you might have.
I know Senator Ward had his hand up, so go ahead, Senator Ward.
Thank you very much. You had stated that that education was not the first priority of this community or of this school. And I think that's fairly clear. What was the first priority of it then?
Through the chair, the first priority I felt was that the community was not appreciative of the outside pressure. This is a subsistence community, a whaling community, and everything that we heard, very concerned about them losing their identity in terms of their culture and traditional ways. That up against Western values is a tremendous strife there. Not wanting to, how would I say this? The parents in the community are extremely protective of their kids, even to a fault. I think over a period of time, they have they pretty much wanted to be left to their own abilities for local determination. I think the result of that kind of behavior and thinking has resulted in a standard that they're being measured against that I think they didn't see. To be honest with you, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, we were looking at graduation rates and dropout rates. That was our measure of success. Well, today we have reading, writing, and mathematics competencies. There's a different scale being applied. I would admit that there's some pressure there, but it's not all bad. And I think the ability to have the conversation for people to gain a better understanding of why they should move forward and perform, that really hasn't taken place.
And if I may, before, and I don't, the two legislators from this area certainly know this subject much better than I do. I have one more point of curiosity, or I need to. You said that that none of the events, and of course we all have heard different events that happened, but none of the events that had happened for the disruption rose to the level of requiring a state trooper action. Did the, from your involvement with the community and talking to different people, did that level that did not rise to the level of trooper action, did it rise to the level, and if so, how long did it go on to where it was causing a number of the students and parents to not be able to participate in the educational system because they too were there? Well, first off, I guess, was there any group of the community that felt as if they were being pressured by a smaller by the group that was trying to throw the teachers out? Were they being pressured by that same group to not participate in the educational system? If I made that clear.
Through the chair, Senator Ward, I'll explain this way. I didn't feel that anyone in the community was being threatened. But I would go on to say that, you know, anyone who feels threatened probably is. Anyone who feels that they're in danger probably is. We did have a chance to interview some of the teachers who left. They gave a variety of reasons why they left, not all of which were safety. I think when you read the report, you'll find that there were four options that they were going to examine. One would be security. Two would be a revisiting of the safety and disciplinary policies. Three would be transfer of teachers, and then four would be the closure of the school. I think inadvertently they did all four. They didn't do it in an order of succession. Perhaps security may have alleviated the problem. We don't know. This is all after the fact. But in answer to your question, the only thing that I saw that might be prevalent here was that in this Eskimo subsistence village, they have a tendency to be understated and polite, and they stay away from conflict. They try to. A few people in that community have very aggressive behavior, and that sets up an opportunity to leverage things that you need from your community. I did notice some of that, but not from the standpoint of fear for themselves, but from the standpoint of a very passive community being leveraged against some aggressive behavior. There were particular individuals in the community who were very powerful because of leveraging and questioning elder support. That was the only thing. I didn't see any violence towards community members. I saw an inordinate amount of support for student behavior, even though the behavior was not necessarily acceptable behavior. But there were cases where parents would come in and be supportive of their kids, irrespective of what was appropriate behavior. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. And maybe if I could put it into my words so that I can understand, a lot of the native communities, whether they be Eskimo or Athabascan or any others, are very polite people, and they don't want to, and they are polite. But there are some that tend to be hostile and take over. Those usually are not the elders, and if the elders were involved in this probably would not have happened. But where there's a vacuum, things kind of fill in sometimes, and if there's a vacuum, a group of people that are, and don't confuse meek with weak, but if a community is in fact a nice group of people, and they aren't adversarial people, they live in a community, then ones that aren't could do some damage on it. But I, for one, unlike probably others here, I didn't know about the logic of building high schools all over the bush, and then I also certainly don't necessarily endorse a blanket snatching people up and moving them to boarding schools either, such as happened to the centers of my, well, all of our parents, I think, had to go through that. But it's something that we got to talk about and not be afraid of. But back to this particular school, last time we were here, and I don't know if the North Slope's here or anything else, but they were going to go through and individually talk to the parents in this community, and I had requested if they interview every one of them, all of them, and I was hoping that I was hoping, and in case they don't, maybe that's something that we ought to do, to start formulating not if there's some kind of a policy or some kind of a program that we can hand to other communities so that they could empower the parents to be prideful of their school. I don't know what we're going to do about the fact that we are not hiring and training Alaska Native teachers, and we have to bring in people from outside that don't want to be there for more than a half a year. And that's not just this school. We all know it's, you know, it's a, I don't know what we do about that. And short of passing a law that the local community give more money, 25% larger salary to residents of the community as compared to non-residents of the community, and then even less to lower 48 community. And I don't even know if that's legal, but I've thought it for a long time, and it seems like a right thing to do, but it probably isn't legal.
Madam Chairman, I was tracking with the first portion of your statement.
You will find a question.
I think that was an accurate representation of the community. I think that they're passive, they're kind. I want to say on the record, they are good people in Kivalina, and they are good students in Kivalina. What has happened here is it has been a result of lower expectations, the lack of implementation of a quality instructional program that met the needs of kids. Those things can be rectified. Unfortunately, it had to come to statewide concern before it reached the level of someone coming in and taking a look. My concern here would be that, and I would caution you, with all the options that we have available to address this issue, I hesitate to endorse any kind of a knee-jerk reaction. What has happened in Kivalina has happened. There's room for improvement, and I'd like to work down that line. We may need some assistance. We really don't know what that entails yet. I know the Department of Education has some concerns. I know that the district itself has some concerns.
And this is where I was heading one more time. Within your report, I didn't read the word parent in there very many times. There was State of Alaska, there's educators, there were far-off school boards. But until, and that's why I was so pleased that the head of the North Slope Borough was going to go down and interview these parents individually. Because if we can't empower the parents to be involved in their own school and their own education of their children, no amount of money or any laws we do is going to work. So that's where I was heading. And I jumped ahead to a real local hire program. But there is nothing that your report's going to do or this body is going to do if we don't have an understanding of why the parents were not engaged in this process. And somebody is doing something wrong to where they weren't engaged. And it may be because there's no jobs out there, there's no future. I don't know. Or else we're just getting bombarded with non-natives teaching them. All these things could be on the table, but without that beginning, we can study this thing till the cows come home, but without the parents engaged in this, that school will never work, and neither will any of the other ones. That's the point that I was trying to find out, because I don't think all this, when he mentioned that one thing at the last meeting, that he was going to go interview every one of those parents, I was hoping they would find some kind of a roadmap for other communities, because we're not going to find it with this group in this room. It's going to have to come from the parents, I think.
Well, you know, if I could insert, I know in one of the letters that I've received, and it has to do, I think it's from Sophie Ferguson, and she talks about the eventual appointment of some kind of group to go in and kind of have an eye on this, and that might be the sort of thing that could segue into what Senator Ward's talking about. But, Mr. Rose, and when the commissioner was giving her report, and when you mentioned yours just now, you both have mentioned the word communication. And after I left here last week, I looked over the report, and it says the word communication one time. And I felt like it was far more important than that to you and to the commissioner. And I found it absent in the report. And I thought, well, maybe they're using communication to mean something that I don't understand, or that has is supposed to be assumed from this. So in that respect, I was disappointed. The other thing that I, you know, and I have not been to Kivalina, nor to any rural school, but in hearing this and reading this, I did have to, I kept coming back to the word lack of respect for authority. You know, just a total disregard for authority. And I don't, and I, some would say there's a touch of racism. Some would say it's a lack of love for educators. Some would, you know, don't want to have anything to do with education or whatever. I don't believe that. But I think there is something in place that has to be removed in order for that district to get better. And in the meantime, I've had reports and letters and phone calls and emails from people who have previously taught there and who've been in that district and who reported great successes and had, you know, had a great time there and were well received and treated very, very well. However, I go back and I don't have the test scores for a long time. But if the test scores from 10 or 12 years ago are not any better than the ones are of today, there's a disappointing record accumulated over a great deal of time, effort, and money that's gone into district that purports to be having school 181 days a year. And that is probably my concern. And then the other is, I was asked to mention again, we mentioned it in our closing, and it was a question that I posed to Commissioner Holloway, and it had to do, the decision, did you guys address the decision to reopen the gym before a decision was made about your, I'm not sure what the time frame was in the reopening of the gym. I had several legislators say, why was that gym reopened when that could have been used as part of the conversation to reopen the school and to return to normalcy and let and be sure that school building is regarded as a neat place to be and something that sometime we earn and is a privilege. Did you go into that discussion at all when you were there?
You've raised about four issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I usually
we inadvertently left the word communication out. It was assumed. As I reported this back to the communities, we identified the lack of a trusting relationship, the inability or the unwillingness to cooperate, thereby leading to a breakdown in communication at every level. So communication was a concern. Our initial concern was one of safety, as I mentioned earlier. It rapidly turned to the educational needs of kids that they were not being met. And so, and then on this issue of the gym, I think almost everybody involved in this were very disappointed to see that gym open for a host of reasons, but the decision was made under tremendous pressure, local pressure. Everyone seems to disagree with it now, but at the time, it was kind of a relief valve, I guess. We weren't involved in any of that, but we questioned, if you're gonna close the school, why did you leave the gym open? And many people said it was a mistake. It was a mistake, but at the time there was a tremendous amount of pressure locally. That's all we knew.
Well, I would suggest that should have been in this report, because I do think that that is perceived. I mean, regardless of how it washed down, it was perceived as an error and should have been pointed out as an act of commission or omission or however we want to portray it, because it... if there's a problem, it did. It absolutely sent the wrong message, because it could have been. Oh, Representative Joel, go ahead.
After you're done, Madam Chairman.
You want to speak now?
Yep.
Okay, go ahead.
I thought you were done, or we're going to finish. Okay.
I will go on and on, so don't worry.
You know, listening to the different questions and the comments that are being made. First of all, a little bit of backdrop. Kivalina's on a spit. And for the last 25 or 30 years, it's been fighting the issue of their land that they are on eroding. There's no place for them to build. The little place that they have, I think there's like 13 new houses going up right now. This is the first new housing that this community has seen in a long time because of the lack of space. And so these houses are just like pressed together. And up until these houses are done, you have as many as three generations of people living under one roof, 17 to 20 people. You talk about no housing for VPSO. That's one of the reasons why. There is no housing available. And so the dynamics that creates under crowded conditions over a long period of time, when people have been, and this community has been very active in trying to get the issue of relocating the community, and have been met with one obstacle over time after another. And it's a very painfully slow process. So this is part of the backdrop. The chairman brought up the issue of the test scores and the low test scores. And it kind of gets to the point, I think, that Carl has been making. And that is, in rural communities where there are no opportunities for employment, other than the school, or as a health aide, or as a CHP, community health aide, the jobs that, or the city or the local IRA, those are really the only jobs that exist. Now, one of the challenges I think that we need to really take a look at as we're looking forward is how do we embrace this low test scores, because I think where you find them, you're going to find them in a lot of rural areas, because there is a disconnect to what you're going to do after high school in terms of the limited opportunities. And I think it becomes a responsibility of not only the education community, but the local community as well as the business community, especially in the magnet centers, where we start looking and making sure that those students in those villages have the opportunity to come in and explore that. And up until this point, up until the last year or so, the only real viable opportunity to do that was a regional boarding school or boarding schools. Until this concept of learning centers crept up. And as we talk about where do we go from here, I think we need to be mindful that we need to help students make the connection of the value of their education in terms of employment, if we're going to look at it from purely a Western model. And how do we make that connection so that those students are plugged in to what opportunities might be there in a place like Kotzebue? And what I'm talking about is, for instance, job sharing. Yep. Can people come into Kotzebue like they do to Red Dog and work 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off? If you look at the health field, what are the possibilities there? I think there are great possibilities, especially where there may be housing that can be part of the package. Look at aviation, the mining industry in our case, but others as well. And I think that's the kind of challenge as we look at trying to get students connected into the value of why it's valuable for them to continue this becomes really key. Because we can have the community plugged in, but if we don't have the students, we're still at the same place. And there there was, you know, we have focused on the misbehavior, the bad behavior of probably a relatively small number of students. And unfortunately, I think the community has, well, the community is paying the price for it. Mm-hmm. You know, and but on the other hand, you know, and it, what, and I don't want to debate the report, but I think in the back of my mind, some of the things that I think about is what started it. Did a simple thing start it? Where, I don't know if it was a student that needed to go to the restroom, or, you know, and it happened in the middle of the class, and you didn't have to go between classes, but all of a sudden, now in the middle of the class, you did, and you're not able to go, or something else. And but what happened in there? Because right now, the way I think many of the people in Kivalina, and I think the students, it's the students' fault. You know, it's that's. And I think we need, in our value system as Native people, respect is very important. And certainly, where it's not there, that has to be corrected. There's no doubt. You know, and that's, and as community people, I think we, but respect has to work two ways. It needs to be a two-way street. But I think that, and what I'm hearing from Carl and what I heard from the commissioner last week is these are the events that led to the closure of the school. This is what happened to open it. But here, more importantly, here lies an opportunity to move the importance of education forward to all Alaskans, regardless of where they live, by finding a way to make them feel plugged in. Because I think there is a disconnect. There's an economic disconnect. There's some social disconnect, and part of that is by isolation. You know, this has got nothing to do with Kivalina, but it's got everything to do with it, and that is the subject of prisons came up. I was talking to somebody today, and I said, you know, if we had a regional prison in these different areas, 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off, there's employment. And more importantly, maybe it also allows communities to make some positive impacts on the people who...
We're working on that, too.
And so you know, those are the kinds of things where I think there's, in a longer-term view, there may be some positives that will have a positive effect, not only on Kivalina, but other communities that are facing this disconnect, because there is this disconnect.
I'm not sure we're going to address your concern today. So
no, we
sure
won't.
We get back to
But I think the point of where I'm trying to go is that you know we could continue to dwell on everything that has occurred, or we can take a look at how the district and the community are going to move forward. And I know Mike Dunleavy's on the borough mayor, Ross Schaefer, is. And still traveling.
Before we go on to that, Madam Chair, you brought up the very subject that I think that we need, at least in your mind, and I don't expect an answer from you or any of the other legislators, or any other people that are leaders in the Native community or anywhere else, but don't be afraid of actually looking at it. I doubt if anybody in this room has been to the fine place of Ferry, Alaska. Okay? That's where my people lived. They don't live there anymore because there aren't any jobs there. And we need to have also the full realizing discussion. If we can't get the the scouts back into rural Alaska, are the National Guard back in, are some develop of some regional corporation minerals, then we're going to have to take a look at the very village that you're talking about, which you're, you know, your family taught in and lived a long time, and I don't take away from that, but what has happened at least needs to be considered. Are we keeping communities with government dollars concreted into an area, whereas otherwise they would have moved and gone to somewhere else? And I'm not saying that that's good, but that's a reality that has been happening up here other than the last 25 years. And are we doing a disservice to the rural communities by not allowing them, where so many, we were nomadic people. We were moving around. We haven't moved around for the last 25 years because we've been able to build schools, have nurses come in, trooper places or whatever. But there aren't any jobs to support them. You can't really make a living off of whaling anymore, any more than my Athabascan group could make it off of caribou. And so that went away. And as we go through this thing, I don't want boarding homes, and I don't want to make communities move away, but also I don't want to trap somebody because of funding them to keep them in a place is going to keep them from being able to have their piece of the Alaska dream, whatever that may be. And so we need to have the total discussion, and I agree with that. And one of those discussions is just because somebody has decided that we're going to put a $20 million school somewhere with no jobs around it and no possibility of a future, are we maybe hurting that group of people too by not doing it differently?
Thank you, Senator. We are going to move from this subject right now. Okay. When we were having the previous discussion, I had left sort of some questions for discussion, and then I will call. We have Dorothy Brown and Mike Dunleavy on. I will call on them after we have this discussion. Commissioner, go ahead.
Sure.
Go ahead, Carl. Sure.
As I mentioned, I'd reviewed the tape. It was an issue of racism that was brought up.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to address that for a moment. Who among us doesn't believe that racism is alive and well throughout our society? Some of us learn to disguise it well. Some of us are not as crafty. But I would have to tell you, some of the concerns that are being labeled as racism, you have some people who are faced with an assimilation model. And I hate to use that word, but there is a standard that's being applied based on Western standards for education that people are being judged against. And I don't want to give anyone an out. I believe in education. It is the great equalizer and it's tremendous opportunity. But I believe the people in Kivalina are not aware of the value and the equalizing effect of a quality education. And because of that, maybe they don't put the emphasis on it that they should. But I do believe if you look in comparison, and I'm going to use my hometown of Skagway as an example, similar size population. If you take a look at Skagway, the behavioral standards are reinforced by the community. If you take a look at the expectation and the delivery system that exists in Skagway, it's very different from that of Kivalina. If you look at the opportunity through education that young people can see every day, very different from Kivalina. If you look at the Western societal and educational values that exist in Skagway, very different from Kivalina. Is that any reason for Kivalina not to achieve? No. No, it's not. But I think we need to be able to fashion a model for them that is not an assimilation model, but one of opportunity. And I think those are some of the discussions that we've had, and if they're not reflected in the report, I take full responsibility. But there are situations that exist in Kivalina that are not like some of the other places we're at. I do believe that as we address the problem in Kivalina, we start to create the model to address schools that are not performing well. And with that, I will close my comments.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Very good. Commissioner, you and perhaps, I'm not sure if you need have anybody else ready to address some of the questions we had. One was about the gym, and if you are satisfied with Carl's response, you can go with that, or you can agree or disagree or add to it, because I still think it's an important piece.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Shirley Holloway, Commissioner of Education and Early Development. I was not even aware that the gym was open. I assumed when I was told the school was closed that the school was closed, and I only learned about the gym several days later through a community contact. Mm-hmm. I was appalled, because I too felt that when we close a school, that's the whole school, and that having a privilege of using the gym could have been used as a part of an important conversation about behavioral standards.
Is there, in statute or regs, do we have a definition of school closure?
We do, and Madam Chairman, Assistant Attorney General Jean Michelle is with me, and we had a conversation about that prior to coming over here. Would you like her to come to the table?
She has something to offer about this, and if we need to do any work on it, or if you can do it through regulation. Jean Michelle?
Madam Chair, while she's coming up too, we're prepared to talk about the authority issues that you brought to our
attention.
Thank you.
Good.
And Truitt is prepared to do that, and our Title I questions, P.J. Ford Slack is prepared.
Okay. The authority questions were what's outlined in the Constitution, statutes, and regs, and who's responsible for what. Okay, and would you give me your name again? I'm sorry.
Yes, thank you. I'm Jean Michelle with the Attorney General's Office.
And how's your last name spelled?
M-I-S-C-H-E-L.
Thank you. Welcome, Jean.
Thank you, Senator.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about the definition of a school closure.
Yes, we don't have a strict definition of school closure. We do have a regulation on the discontinuation of schools.
Mm-hmm.
That regulation is was drafted in the 70s, and again, in response to the Molly Hooch litigation, regulation doesn't differentiate between a permanent or a temporary discontinuation of a school program. There is a procedure that we don't believe was followed by
Do you think our current regulations are adequate to cover the definition of a school closure? Or do they need to be addressed by the state board?
I think that we could clarify it. This is a first-time experience with this type of temporary closure.
The board might be doing that. Okay.
I think it's very important for the board to review that regulation, and obviously it's outdated.
Sure.
And needs to be updated in light of this incident.
Okay. Thank you. Did you have anything else?
Well, I have a question for her.
Yes. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you. Is there another community hall or a community place for gathering up there other than the gymnasium?
Through the chair, Senator Ward, no. Not to my knowledge.
Well, then they had to have a place to kind of all gather together, didn't they?
Have to have when the building's not closed. That's probably true.
Well, but there is no other community building, is there?
There's the school district.
I believe Enoch Adams is on that can clarify that, but I think there is a community center, but I don't think it's used as in any form as recreational, more as for meetings, as I recall.
Madam Chair, also, there may be some kind of a contractual arrangement in regards to the gym that we're not real clear about.
We need to find that out.
They may need to respond to that.
We'll do that when they come on the line. Thank you. Just hold your question until Lena Adams comes on. Okay, go ahead. And who did you say would be presenting?
I'd like to ask, if, with your permission, Ken Truitt, Assistant Attorney General Ken Truitt.
Okay,
to come
thank
and talk
you.
About the authority okay. issues that you asked about last time.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Ken Truitt. I'm with the Attorney General's Office, and I'm here to address briefly the questions that you raised last time we gathered about statutory provisions for authority regarding education. It may come as no surprise to the members of the committee and to you, Madam Chair, that the primary directive of education is found in the Alaska State Constitution, and it states that the legislature shall by general law establish and maintain a system of public schools open to all children of the state. Our Supreme Court has labeled this as a pervasive state authority for the delivery of education, and as we said that the legislature, this provision of the Constitution provides that the legislature will be the primary institution to deliver that. Now the legislature has delegated that authority to two primary different bodies in two primary different ways. The legislature has delegated the specific authority to manage and govern school districts, or manage and govern schools to school districts.
Mm-hmm.
So in the first instance, school districts have the very specific authority to manage the operations, the delivery of education, and to govern and provide for the governance of schools and school districts. The legislature has also provided to the department and the State Board of Education with general authority over the delivery of education in the state, and the exact relationship between a school district's specific authority and mm-hmm. the department's general authority are not very clear at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Related to Kivalina, we couldn't really tell you with any certainty how far the department's authority reaches. In this instance here, the primary authority to deal with this problem is the borough school districts. And maybe I can further clarify that, because nowhere in Title 14 is the department given the specific authority to go in and operate a school that's existing in a borough and existing in a borough school district.
Mm-hmm.
That specific authority is given to the school district itself. The department does, as I mentioned, have general authority. What exactly that means, I think, is going to depend on how the circumstances unfold.
Okay. But at some point, authority was given to that school district by the department, or was it just generally to all?
By the legislature,
to the borough,
absolutely.
But was it to the legislature, to the department, there's no pass-through? So that at some point the legislature could appoint the, or be involved. Oh, wonderful. Sorry I asked this question. But then the legislature could withdraw the authority for a school district to oversee a school district.
The way that it's set out in Title 14 right now, the authority of school districts are laid out specifically in statutes, and there's
no
grant
to a district.
To a specific district, that's correct.
Okay, so this is a one issue, this is a unilateral gift. You don't have to do anything to receive the gift, the ability to be a school district. You don't have to organize and follow state law and abide by the rules and regs and what the Department of Education brings to your discussion?
Madam Chair, I'm not quite sure I understand the question. A school district is a part of a borough or a city, so it has to operate within also the bounds of Alaska statutes that
okay.
are provided for the governance of boroughs and cities. Regional attendance areas have, provisions are there for regional attendance areas to have a district or general authority as well, and there are specific statutes that the legislature has put out and provided that deal with how that authority then is exercised by a regional attendance area. But I'm not sure how that translates into a unilateral gift. I'm not quite sure I understand.
No, I'm saying if the state has just endowed the title of school districts on 53 different school districts and they haven't had to do anything to receive that, then I don't think that's how the way it operates. I think they had to do certain things in order to be given that title. And I'm saying if they aren't doing what that title required, then that agreement could be revoked or changed or altered. That's all I was saying. But it would have to be through the legislature that happens, not through the Department of Education.
I think that's generally correct,
okay.
Madam
okay.
Chair. At some point in the situation we have here, I mean, Kivalina, the State Department is going to have some sort of authority. I think the conundrum or the ambiguity is really highlighted by Mr. Rose's report. If you look in the report, he does talk about the school district being the sole authority to deal with the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his conclusions, however, is that if none of this works, then the state should intervene.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think everybody kind of recognizes that The primary body with the authority to govern that school district and to manage that school district is the borough school district. If, however, the many options that Mr. Rose has talked about, and he is working to explore those, if all of those options go unheeded, if there's a complete abdication of the specific authority by the school district to follow through with their statutory duties, I think everybody has the assumption that somewhere some other body has the authority to do something. And while that isn't specifically laid out in Alaska statute, what we have is the department with its general authority, its general supervisory authority, to oversee the education in Alaska.
Okay. Well, that's certainly not the plan, by the way, for everyone who's listening, to for anyone to go in and intervene. Our hope is that that borough school district does pick up the mantle and move with it and go with it. And because, believe me, I don't know anyone who wants to do this at all. But it is important to find out where responsibilities lie. And I do want to reemphasize that sentence in the report that says it is up to the Northwest Arctic Borough School District. And I applaud Ross Schaefer and his offer to go in and do interviews and to talk to people. In fact, I talked to him and reiterated the importance that information go back to the school board and become part of the information they use in conducting and continuing classes at the McQueen School. Okay, the next one. Sir.
Madam Chair, that's kind of the general overview that I have. There aren't really any more entities to really discuss about who has the authority to do what. It's the school district and then the department.
And that's all the statutes and regs actually contain. I know I was intrigued to read in the book on health, education, and welfare, and it talks about that this Article 7 is the shortest in the Constitution, and at the time it was written, it was the least controversial. So we'll leave it a little legacy here. But and as you say, that much of that authority has gone from the legislature to the department and or school district. So any other comments, Ken?
Well, in the vein of what Mr. Rose talked about in terms of there being options, both the school districts and the department are given the specific statutory authority to enter into agreements with each other to provide for the more efficient or economical delivery of education services. The department is given the specific authority to establish, maintain, and govern area, regional, and special schools. Now, exactly what that means, we're not entirely sure, but at least in terms of options, it is contemplated in statute that the department can provide contractual and consulting types of services to assist districts, I would venture to say that since that specific provision to enter into agreements with school districts is in both of these entities' specific statutory grants of authority, that it looks like the legislature contemplated that it would be an option that is exercised.
Is there an example of that? Is CESA an example of that? No?
CESA's not an example of that. Madam Chair, we do enter into some contracts on a regular basis with school districts that have to do with going in and working with the school district on specific projects, or we enter into an agreement when we use district people to work on statewide issues, and so we have
a curriculum or something. Okay,
we have some contractual agreements, and we're encouraging Northwest Arctic School District to enter into some partnerships, not only within their region but outside their region, to help with them with the expertise they need to turn this around.
Okay. And that brings me, we'll go to teleconference in just a moment, but in the conversation about some group to follow up on this, whether it's the hiring of an external facilitator, a group to do assessment or whatever, I have a great concern over the funding of that. I want to be sure that that's part of the discussion that gets back to the legislature. if there's anything ongoing outside the this particular discussion. And, so we want to be sure that, again, the community and the district has the opportunity to work on that doubly hard. And anything else? Okay. Are there any other questions for the commissioner?
I'm sure the only other report you requested had to do with Title I. Did you want to wait until
after? Please, no. You may go ahead and do that, please.
Dr. P.J. Ford Slack would come forward.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Kim. Title I is the new federal law.
Senator Green, for the record, my name is P.J. Ford Slack. I'm the Director of Teaching and Learning Support that's a division within the Department of Education and Early Development. And in answer to your question, Senator Green, it is not a new program.
Okay.
It is part of the reauthorization of the Elementary
and
Secondary School Act, just for clarification.
Go ahead. That's fine.
So just to clarify for the committee, the Division of Teaching and Learning Support is a division that largely deals with curriculum issues, and most of the staff is funded with federal funds, such as special education, and most of the title programs. And under the Elementary and Secondary School Act, we have 10 title programs. The report we have before you is one of the areas where, if the department is going to look for some way to help a school, we look at it through the federal programs because of the authority that Assistant Attorney General Truitt just listed to you. So one of the things that we have happening right now is something called adequate yearly progress. Now that is in transition, but what you have before you is the old definition that Alaska has used to help decide which schools get specific help under these Title I funds. And it's based on Alaska's definition of adequate yearly progress. And the definition was schools with 11 or more students, and this was the data you have is from the fourth grade, taking the CAT 5, that's the California Achievement Test 5, where 61% or more of the students are not proficient or advanced levels, having answered 50% or more of the questions correctly, and have not made adequate yearly progress. Schools that do not make adequate yearly progress for two consecutive years are designated as Title I school improvement sites for the following year. And we have had quality school facilitators go in and work with these sites. Now, Alaska actually has almost 83 schools at least that might have been eligible. However, we only have 13 schools that are school improvement sites because our schools are small. And so they drop off the list for these federal funds based on our Alaska definition.
Because it's not 11, more than 11.
Because they were not 11, or because we had incomplete data, or they didn't. In Kivalina's case, we had a couple of things going on. The first year in 1998, on the first page it says, in 1998, 12 students were tested and 50% did not meet proficiency. Our definition was 60%. So they were classified as having made adequate yearly progress. In 1999, we had 9 students tested, but then they're too small. In 2000, 13 students were tested, 84% did not meet proficiency, and they failed adequate yearly progress. In 2001, there's some question as to what happened to their test. We're not sure what happened to the test, but we had no data. So they might have actually made the school improvement site list, but without the data, we can't submit that to the federal government to have them be a school improvement site. What we do know is that they're definitely a school that needs help. We then asked our quality school team leaders. This is part of the Quality School Initiative that Commissioner Holloway and others have moved forward for a number of years. And we checked to make sure that we've had no request from Northwest Arctic, no request from Kivalina, to receive whatever extra help we can provide through the department with extra money, such as assistant in services, providing information on standards, perhaps looking for assessment experts, if that was the case, providing information for grant applications, responding to curriculum designs, and I'll go even further, if there were special ed concerns, of course, we could provide that, or if there were any behavioral concerns, we could also give support in that respect. We also prepared for you, Senator Green, on page 2, is the breakout of the money that Northwest Arctic Borough School District receives under all of the title programs. The only program that we can get school-specific data for is Title I, and we know that in FY02 that McQueen School was eligible and received $70,063. They would be eligible under the other title programs, such as Migrant Ed, Math Science, Reading, Safe and Drug-Free Schools, for other pieces of the allocation, but we do not have that breakdown, nor are we required to have school-by-school breakdown at the department.
Did the district have it?
They may
have it. The third piece of paper are Title I school improvement sites for 2001-2002. Again, I would like to remind all the members of the legislature here and Senator Green that this is based on the AYP definition that the state of Alaska has been using. This is changing, mm-hmm. and after meeting with our consultants, with the designator committee the past 3 days, there's a very good chance, as with other states, that with the current No Child Left Behind, we could see an increase to perhaps 3/4 of our schools falling into the academic needing school improvement issue.
Okay, will the 11 change?
Yes.
The number 11 change? Will it be reduced? Will it go down?
I don't believe so, because then you wouldn't have statistically significant data. We may not use that sort of a determination for us to be able to pick up all of our schools.
Okay.
But as far as, you have to be very careful when you're looking at the data. There are other ways that we're working on now that we're very aware of the issue of the size of our schools and how much smaller they are than in some other states, that we make sure that we include all of our schools so that all schools can get help when we run these designation figures or run the figures for the Title I.
And you're telling me that then that helps with that very small class number?
I believe it will.
Okay,
yes.
Okay.
Have to be able to show to the federal government, Senator Green, that we have indeed paid attention to all of our schools, and that's a piece we're working with USDA.
Okay, would you confirm for me that the $1,753,000 plus is federal money that does not come anywhere through the legislature's budget? The state of Alaska? That's all federal?
That's federal.
And that does not go through the state of Alaska?
Give us the authority.
Legislature budget.
That's correct. You exactly what Commissioner Holloway said. You give us the authority to spend it. Or
but not through the formula. Thank you.
The last, Senator Green, for your attention, that the other legislators' attention here. List A, and this is just a preliminary. This, again, is based on the Cat 5. We no longer use the Cat 5. This is just based on grade 4. But just to give the committee some idea, in List A, the following 32 schools failed to meet AYP on March 2001 based on the Cat 5 testing and would be identified as school improvement sites, except they were too small under the existing definition. So this gives you some indication of some other sites that are having some academic difficulties. But they were too small. In List B, the following 38 schools are low performing but did not meet the requirements for identification as Title I school improvement sites for a variety of reasons, including missing data, perhaps they had no fourth grade students tested that year, other issues that we're slowly learning as we learn how to do better data collection to pick up on.
Okay. Commissioner MPJ, is there a possibility that information of this sort can be included in those interim designator reports before 2005?
kind of agree on it.
Yeah, because I have had several people mention to me the kind of chilling effect that the whole conversation has had on delaying the designator, which is not something I want to do. But I want to be sure that we, that the committee and the legislature and the powers that be end up with a enough information that we feel that we are getting a report of the actual status and that we don't have any more schools that crop up. And that's been my concern. I mean, I really am concerned about that. And I know a lot of other folks are too. Did you have something else you needed to tell us?
No, I'm fine.
Any questions for PJ or the commissioner on this?
The commissioner, I guess.
Okay, go ahead. Senator Ward?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, when we passed the high school qualifying exam and did all the testing and that stuff underneath it, I think every time you do something, you later on find out that certain things may not fit. The representative from this area just described a community that has no income other than unless you work for the government. And those jobs, you have to have higher education in order to get them. And just from, it seems to me that we probably should have some kind of a discussion about a disservice that we may be doing to an entire group of people, saying that you have to have a benchmark towards a higher education in order to make a living, instead of learning how to run a D8 CAT and maybe get on with Cominco or something like that. Because I don't know how the farm communities used to work in the lower 48, but I would imagine that it would be almost as foreign to have people from the larger cities come in, and if there was no opportunities other than to work on a farm or to work around in the area, they would gear towards that, and someone would excel and become teachers. In this case, all there are is government jobs to take higher education, and I'm a little concerned that through the educational process, we may have trapped large groups of people into a bad situation. And so as you go through this, I would like very much for you as the commissioner to report back to if what I suspect is true, and that is that we're trying to teach and educate a group of people that cannot possibly, or the majority anyway, can't relate to going into higher education for whatever reason. And maybe with the internet and the other things that are here now, that may change. But I just know from a personal experience that it made a lot more sense for me to be involved in a shop class than it did geometry, and it's done very well for me throughout the years. And not that there isn't those things there, but and I don't want to measure people differently. I believe Alaska Native people are some of the absolute brightest and smartest people in the world, but we may not be approaching this right. And as commissioner, I'd like you to think about it a little bit, and if there's something that comes out of this that reflects that, then I'd like to do something about it. Short of getting private enterprise jobs out there so people can have something to strive for, I don't know what to do. We can't create enough government jobs to give people and embolden them for a future. And that is the problem in a lot of parts of Alaska, not just rural Alaska.
Thank you.
But if you could just, as you go through this, think about the scoring mechanism we have and if that has a relationship to the job opportunities that are not available, what is perceived as available. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. If you don't have any more comments, I'm going to ask Dorothy Brown and Mike Dunleavy to make their comments, and then we do need to follow up with some sort of okay, Dorothy Brown. If you'd give your name and who you represent, please.
Hi, Kate Brown. I just got on to listen to the discussion on the issues of Kivalina. But if Mike want to go ahead first, I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you. Mike Dunleavy?
Mike Dunleavy is here in Cotabia.
Okay, and your position, please, and who you represent?
I'm the Assistant Superintendent for the Northwest Hartboro School District, standing in for our CEO, Charles Manson, who is out of state attending to a medical situation with his family.
Okay, did you have testimony you wanted to give today, Mike?
Yes, I do. Okay. Should I begin now?
Go, please do. Thank you.
Okay. The Northwest Hartboro School District has embraced the standards movement since its beginning, several years ago. As many of you recall, Jerry Covey was our former superintendent of later in the education and was instrumental in the state adopting the standards, content performance standards. From that point, we've been having discussion and dialogue in the Northwest School District regarding the standards. And in as much, we have done, I think, a tremendous amount in gearing our whole program towards standards. We have aligned our curriculum in reading, writing, and math to the standards. We have implemented an internal assessment tool. We contracted out the Northwest Education Association of Portland, Oregon, to align our standards with that assessment so we can measure performance internally. We have geared all of our staff development towards the standards and teaching the standards, implementing the standards, assessing the standards. Our resources that we have adopted for the curriculum areas have been resources that we have researched with committees based on the best way, the best methods to teach the standards and have our students reach the standards. And we continue to strive in that direction. Part of what occurred with Kivalina, I believe, is a result of our attempts at trying to assist our students at meeting those standards. For some time, as many of us know, education in Alaska was certainly, at the local level, was certainly determined by local school boards and local standards. And then with the advent of the standards movement, the bar was raised some areas, but was uniform across the state. In attempts to meet that bar, we've had some resistance because some of the people, some of our students, this may have occurred too quickly. And in the situation with Kivalina, in our efforts to raise quality education, a few individuals, and certainly it's not the whole community, it's not the whole student body, had a difficult time working with this at reaching those standards. Coupled with that, there certainly were some issues involving behavior on the part of some students and some adults that helped contribute to this this issue surrounding the closure. I also want to make a point. There was a question that came up with regard to the closure of the school, but the gym remaining open. That is an interesting thing because, as you know, there's no real blueprint for closing a school or suspending the operations of a school. When this decision was made, it was decided that the gym would remain open because it was contracted out to community organizations. Most of our gymnasiums in our school district and our schools, we do have contracts with local organizations to use those gyms and at times classrooms as well to carry on activities for the community. And felt that this was a an educational issue, a school safety issue, and at the time of the closure, we wanted to continue to honor our contracts because we do sign contracts with community organizations in which they pay a small nominal fee to use those facilities. So that was one of the reasons why the gym was allowed to be open.
Mike, if you would put down on your list of things we'll be needing is a copy of those contracts and the payment schedule, And another thing I'm going to be needing from the Northwest Arctic Borough School District is a breakdown of a little better on the finances of monies routed to the advisory school board there in Kivalina. How some of those funds, because we've tried to get some of that funding and we're told that it's not broken down by school. However, I think that there probably exists some way for that to show up what's actually going into that school on the financial side. And if you can give me some information on that, I'd appreciate it. Go ahead with your testimony.
We'll certainly get that information to you.
Thank you.
Another issue that I heard that come up on the over the meeting is that the closure of the school, there was some issue as to whether there was a if it was in line with alignment with laws or regs. We look at this closure as part of a process, be it painful, in our continued efforts to improve the educational situation for our students in the Northwest. Obviously, we would have hoped that it didn't have to come to this, but we do look at it as part of the process, not an end to something. Not necessarily a beginning to something, but part of the process. And we're fully prepared to continue with that process of improving education. There's a number of steps that we have taken before the process, before the school was actually closed, during the actual closure, and if the school is open, we have there's a number of steps we have taken, including meeting with the community at several different meetings, sending representatives from the district up to Kivalina to work with individuals and advisor groups on a one-on-one basis and in a group setting. As you mentioned, our borough mayor Ross Schaefer has been up there and will continue to be part of this process. We have put together some short-term plans to get the school reopened. We're working on some committees to develop long-range plans. We have sent out a letter to the advisory school board of Kivalina to join with us in forming a joint task force to look at the issues, all of the issues surrounding the closure, and to try and work a long-range plan so that this situation does not occur again. All, once again, in the effort to improve the educational situation for students in our district. With regard to closure, oftentimes most of the schools in Alaska have the authority to develop their calendars, whether it's a Christmas vacation issue, a spring break issue, if there was a weather issue. We do have the opportunity and authority to amend our calendar. And as such, with this closure and viewing it as part of the process to try and improve the situation, we are looking at a calendar amendment that would still keep us within the state's mandated number of days that the school needs to be in session.
And what are you kind of looking at? What are you looking at now, Mike?
Is an issue of a violation of any rights or laws.
No, I don't think anyone's questioned your extending. I think that's been the assumption all along, that it would definitely be an extended calendar, and that will be up to the district to see that that happens. I do want to know who's been sent up to accompany Ross Schaefer, and when. What kind of short-term plans are you looking at, long-range plans? And I'd like a copy of that letter to your advisory school board. And do you think that an internal joint task force is adequate to look at that, or do we need to look at some folks from outside to come in? And I don't mean outside the state, I mean outside your local area to come in and impact that too, because these things can be a little tough when you're self-monitoring.
Senator, I really do think this is a local issue, and during this process, we certainly may ask for assistance from DED and other organizations, but I do believe this is an issue that has originated locally, and it's going to be solved locally, and I think that's the best approach.
Well, Mike, let me give you a little advice. I would suggest respectfully that you look outside your district to bring in some folks to help you on this quest, because there are a lot of eyes following this, and I think it's going to take more than With all due respect, I think you need to get in some other people to give you some input and some assistance. And I have no idea who that might be, but I would respectfully request that that be one of your priorities in looking at this and seeing how this works out. Okay, go ahead.
Sure, Senator. As part of the letter that has got out to the Kivalina ASB to set up the task force, the makeup of that task force does include having an individual from a state organization such as TED be part of that task force. That's what you are suggesting at our local level, to at least one individual from outside the region and possibly more as far as, the task
force. Are there questions for Mike?
Yes.
Jerry? Senator Ward?
Thank you very much. I have two questions. One is, can you tell me the size of the community hall there and how many people it hold?
I'm not sure, Senator, the size of it. I'm not sure its capacity.
Okay, I'll get that from somebody else then. Is there a community hall there?
There is.
Okay.
All
right, thank you. And the next question is to kind of go on in Senator Green's comment about bringing in people that are experts. I would hope that at the very least you talk to people that have been facilitators in the manner of trying to extract information in the best possible way. And I hope that you have already started, or else you're about to start, on the interview of all the parents in the community, so that they not are a part of the solution, but they in fact are the major part of the solution, because I just absolutely believe that if we don't have that, we won't have a model that can fit other communities. So. And there are people that do know how to do this. I'm certainly not one of them, but there are facilitators and people with that are able to do this that can. And I'm looking forward to that report back of the interview of the parents in the community as to what they think about this.
Sure, Senator. And that process has started, and our Mayor Ross Schaefer has been part of that.
Did either of you gentlemen have a question?
No, I didn't.
Mike? Okay, thank you. Carl, before we kind of wrap this up, would you reiterate the final parts of the report? I think it goes past the assets available to address the McQueen School problems, and it was recommendation to the school board and your summary. Do you have that reduced to memory so that you don't need the report?
Pretty much. Then.
Okay, go ahead.
For the record, Carl Rose with the School Board Association. The recommendations that we made were based on outside facilitation, competent outside facilitation that would assist the school district in addressing two things. One, the behavior that led up to the closure of McQueen School, and two, an educational improvement plan to address the needs of kids. We also identified that much of this had to do with the relationship that existed, and much of it would depend on the behavior of adults more so than the behavior of students. And I think that Senator Ward's comments are absolutely in track. You know, the bulk of our communities are aligned to parents. And so much of what we do in community engagement is aligned to parents. And so, you know, in closing, in your question, the two things that we offer are anecdotal because of the behavior leading up to closure and also the needs of kids. But we felt very strongly that competent outside facilitation with a group identified from inside, which I think Mr. Dunleavy has identified for you, would be very helpful in being able to pull the community together. As was mentioned from a tape that I watched, this cannot be done from the top down, nor can it be done from the bottom up. It has to be simultaneous, addressing all of those disconnect issues that we talked about.
Okay, in your development and implementation of a school improvement plan, you list out some things that this plan should address, and school advisory, school and advisory board leadership, educational program and student achievement, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do you still feel like those are worthwhile aims and goals for this group to be looking at, to address in their plan to address the concerns they may have?
Senator, very much so. The governance of schools, fully understood. You know, I think that the advisory board is key at the local level. It's the method of communicating in terms of the opportunity for input from a community to the school through the advisory board, but also the dissemination of information. So it's critical that the advisory board be up to speed and operating. I understand that the advisory board has had some training, but I'm not real clear that they understand their role and the responsibility of an advisory board. We've had these discussions with an exit interview with the school district as we left, but all the things that I list in there are items that are critically important. When you take a look at, suffice it to say, there's more than enough blame to go around from top to bottom. And I think every level needs to take a look at what their role and responsibilities are. And a lot of this can be done through a communications audit, very simply through a communications audit. As I mentioned earlier, the willingness to want to cooperate and build these relationships are critical to that communication component. So yes, the things that we advocate in there are still the things that I think need to be focused on.
Are there any other questions? Is there anyone else on the teleconference who wishes to testify? Who?
Walter Sampson,
Kotzebue. Okay,
Hello.
Hello, Walter. Would you give your name and who you represent and begin your testimony, please?
Yes, my name is Walter Sampson, and I work for Nevada Regional Corporation. I also assist on the Northwest Carter Borough Assembly. And just a few comments. I intended to listen to the whole meeting here, but I had some other meetings, and I wasn't able to catch part or segments of the first segments of this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But based on the last hearing that I sat on, more than anything, I guess, as a leader within this region, I was really more frustrated with the that was given to the joint committee by Commissioner Holloway. When you tag a community as a dysfunctional community, you're tagging the whole community. And it's sad to see that the state of Alaska taking a position tagging a community as a dysfunctional community. I know darn well that it's not the whole community that's creating the problem. We've got a very small percentage of people that are creating this. Yet, given a public report like that and calling the community a dysfunctional community, to me, is very frustrating. And I hate to use that word frustrate, but that's basically what led me to say that after listening to the report. And in regards to the outside facilitation, I don't think that's going to work. I mean, somebody from outside the region is not going to work. Anytime you get an outside facilitator to facilitate something like this, you're creating that much more problem for the community. I say that because, first of all, if the facility